We'd like to welcome Kimberlyn from Marin County with 30 years. Big hand. Thank you.
My name's Kimberlyn, and I'm an addict. Tom, whoa, thank you so much. I loved every minute of that. This is the part I don't love, but I loved what you shared. Thank you so much. It's a privilege to be here. Thank you so much, Bobby, for asking me, Chris, for showing me around, and all the women that are in here. My heart goes out to you with your children. You know, me too. You know, I'm there with you. And on the guys, you know, thank you for doing this deal. Thank you for being in recovery, opening your hearts, talking to each other, you know, raising families and kids with love and doing it different, you know, than was done to us. So thank you so much. It's a privilege to be here. You know, I can never repay what NA gave to me. Never, ever, ever. You know, my kids, thank you. I thank you. My parents, thank you. My brother thanks you. You know, everybody in my life thanks you. And thank you for being there for them, you know, if they ever decide to come in. It's a beautiful thing we have here. You know, it's not for people who need it, if only, you know, it's for people who want it. And how did we get so lucky to sit here? You know, I mean, no matter what you're going through today, if you're sitting here, you're a miracle. And to think that, you know, I think when I was using, you know, especially when I first came in, you know, I would see words on a wall and I'd say, you know, right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Sure. You know, like, no, give me something that's going to work. You know, I didn't have any clue how that was, what was on the wall was going to transfer into something that was actually going to keep me from using and going to, you know, make me never want to use again. Like it's so weird how this works, you know. And I've been thinking a lot about lately, like, well, I've been going through shit, right? I've been going through some stuff. And I've been thinking about, like, what is it that my higher power is, or what is it that keeps us together and, you know, keeps these traditions alive, keeps these steps alive. Like, no matter what we do, we can't ruin it, you know, and we do all kinds of stuff and it still comes out, you know, changing people's lives and keeping us together in this sort of disorganized, organized way. And it's, you know, the power, that power to me is called anonymity. It's a power greater than us that works through everything that we do. It's the spiritual foundation of all of our traditions and steps. And it's come to mean so much to me through, you know, through my recovery. And certainly now that the book is out, the Guiding Principles book is out, you know, it really does a good job step by step of showing us how this is done. You know, there's something we talk a lot about here. It's called goodwill. And it's one of the bases of our pyramid. And when I put goodwill and I kind of bring anonymity with that, to me, that's my higher power. And it's working here. It's working in all of you. And I see it working in my life. You know, when I can get out of my head and just sort of look around and look at how, I mean, I was driving here and nobody, like, everybody stayed in their lane, you know? You know, I mean, they gave me a key and I went into my room and it was clean. Like, there's this thing at work that somehow, despite all the evidence to the contrary, is just steering me, maybe you, certainly Narcotics Anonymous, just steering it to, like, yeah, not so much there, but a little bit over here. And for, you know, the goodwill in the program, I mean, you guys helped me, loved me until I could love myself, and I couldn't love myself when I got in here. And if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't even know what that word means. You know, I was full of, like Tom was saying, you know, full of self-hate, full, you know, when I was a little girl, I got hurt like little girls do, right? And my parents were alcoholics, and they did the best they could. But I hated alcoholics. I hated them. because of what was done to my brother and I. And I got, there was something in me, like in my personality or whatever, that just took that and ran with it. And I just put up that wall, and my heart just closed in. And there was nothing you could do to make me believe that you love me. In fact, the closer you got, the more I pushed back and the more I proved that you didn't love me. You know, it's like if you're new over here, you know, or those of us that have been around a while, isn't that the deal? We can't let the love in. You know, we can't open up that wall, that hard heart. There's always something wrong with you, or with what you're trying to do, or you're going to get something from me, or you're going to want something from me. And that hurt that I had from long ago just kept me so isolated and so alone. And, you know, in that isolation and aloneness, you know, I mean, you kind of adopt roles, right? You kind of, okay, how am I going to figure this out? You know, how am I going to do my life? You know, what's the best course of action to make, you know, that small hurt part of me, you know, go smaller and smaller and deeper in, and that persona of what I needed to get around in the world, you know, how can I make that bigger, better, smarter, you know, get over on you know, all that stuff. And, you know, I had to kind of get tough and sort of forget who I really was. And when I think about, like, when I first came in, that's what I was discovering, that there was a person inside here that had been hurt, that didn't have to stay hurt, that she could be whoever she was and kind of figure things out. You know, become the person I was meant to be. And I remember, you know, Thomas talking about, you know, your first, you know, meetings or what you hear or what you take home, you know, and it was somebody wrote in my book, NA gives you wings to fly. And I remember thinking, what, me fly? Like, I could really dream. I could really have something. I could really think about what I wanted to do with my life and make a difference somewhere. Like, that was so foreign to me when I came in. I was so busy being what I thought everybody wanted me to be so that I could survive. You know, I was raised in the Bay Area, and in that time period where, you know, it was the 60s and the 70s, and there was all that stuff going on. And, you know, I was a good little girl until it didn't work being a good little girl. And then I was a bad little girl. I'll show you. And that mind expansion, that, you know, that whole deal around, you know, the 60s and the drug use and the Vietnam era and, you know, living in the Bay Area. You know, we did that. You know, we were in high school. We were running that. I remember, you know, I never drank alcohol. I hated alcoholics, you know, but I remember, my first, you know, experience with drugs. I remember it like, you know, I mean, I remember that it was like the doors of perception, you know. It was like, boom, let's kick the door open and there's a whole big world out there, you know. And it's all about spiritual fulfillment and waking up and not being my parents and being the counterculture. And I remember I was in the backyard doing some stuff with some friends, and I came inside the house, and my dad was sitting at the table, and my mom was saying, oh, he's back again. Isn't it great that your dad is back again? And I was just like, you fucking assholes. I mean, it was like the persona was lifted, and I saw it for what it was. I saw the bullshit for what it was. And I just chased that. You know, I chased that. You know, I've done all that stuff, you know, was arrested, needles, you know, I've did all that stuff. And when I came in here, when I finally found out about NA and I came to my first meeting, I was so ready. I was so broken. It didn't work anymore. I went to my first meeting when I was in 1984. I was a candlelight meeting, and you guys did that thing that the drugs did, you know, where it was like the doors of perception opened up and it was, what is happening here? Because what was happening here were people were talking about my insides, like that wall that I had shut off and I didn't even know myself. You guys were all telling my story. You were being honest and sincere, and you were guys and you were girls, and you were speaking my truth. And I had lost the ability to know what truth was. In fact, truth wasn't so good. You know, like I would lie because Tom said I would lie because it was just as easy. You know, it was easier than telling the truth. You know, why would you do that? So I heard something my first meeting. I heard honesty. I heard tenderness. I heard quiet. You know, you guys sat still. You read some stuff. You know, I think because the lights were out, you know, and that's the thing about anonymity, too. You know, this personal distinction has got to go. You know, we can't afford it anymore. You know, it's living the life of humility. You know, I'm no better, but I'm no worse. You know, I'm just, you know, someone else sitting in a meeting, you know, no matter what kind of time I have or what I do for a living. You know, it's not about that. What my political views are, or what the color of my skin is, or any of that. You know, it's about, you know, any addict can stay clean, use the desire to use, and find a new way to live. Any addict. You know, woman, white, black, man, person with time, going through something, newcomer, any addict. You know, all we care about is what we can do to help you with your problem. That's what we care about. And what we'll do is just about anything to help you with your problem. So I heard something at my first meeting. It was a woman speaking. She talked about using the way I used. She talked about, you know, everything that was happening to me. I'm so fortunate, you know. I mean, back in 1984, you know, there was a lot of older men in meetings. You know, there wasn't a lot of young women. And I was 24 years old. And so I connected right away, you know. It took a while, like Tom was saying, you know, like I did surrender. But I had so much fear. I couldn't see how I could find a new way to live. I kept coming to meetings, but I had to, it was like I was holding on to my old way of life, the only way I knew, and I was reaching out for you guys. But what I didn't know and what I had to find out was you have to let go of that. And then you're like in space, like, whoa, you know, you know, as the program comes up and holds you, you know, I mean, everyone in here has been helped by somebody that has been in that position. You've been in that position before. We don't get in here alone. We don't stay here. We maybe we get in here alone, but we can't stay alone. We can't. It has to crack on the inside. And it has to open up. And what happened for me was called feelings. That's what happened. You know, I had to feel everything. And we talk about what a privilege that is now, right? That it's a privilege to feel now. Because I used to not feel. And I did a great job. And I use more and more and more because actually human beings feel, actually. It's like a normal thing to do. But everything triggered that hurt from long ago. You know, there was this and there was nothing. Like, I didn't know that there were like all these colors in between with your feelings and that you could have all kinds of different kinds of feelings all at the same time and that you don't die, you know, like, so, you know, learning how to have them, be okay with them, not go, you know, eat a bunch of stuff or try to do something or clean a bunch of stuff or like how, you know, I mean, isn't that what it's still about? You know, it's still about those feelings come up because life happens. You know, I've never been here You know, I've never been this age standing in front of you or at my house, you know, single again, you know, with kids gone and, you know, all that kind of stuff is new. It's new because we're changing. It's impermanent. You know, it's impermanent. You know, there's such a part of me that wanted to just, you know, graduate and have a great life. End of story. You know, it's not that way. So that's where the steps come in, right? That's where the steps come in. I mean, they are a working tool. Like, I need glasses. They help me. I put them on and I read. It's like, I need to learn how to do life, so I pick up the steps and I work them as a tool. And they aren't some esoteric thing that's in a book that we philosophize about. As Tom was saying, we put it into practice. What is it? How do you do it? And for me, you know, the writing out an inventory is paramount to my recovery. To keep me clean, to keep me free, happy, you know, free. You know, like, there's stuff going on, but it doesn't own me. It doesn't have to own me because I work tools, you know. And as Tom said, you know, it's 30 years of life in between, you know. It's like I heard someone say, it took me 30 years to get here, but it takes me one day to be new again. And it really put it in perspective for me because, you know, we can say, oh, it's 30 days. It's just one day at a time. But for me, it's fucking 30 days. It's 30 years, you know. It's like, how did I stay clean through all that stuff that happened when I couldn't even go a day or two without finding ways and means to get and use more? Like, I was talking to someone, it was like, there's so much time. You have so much time on your hands. You know? Now you got to go find out what you want to be when you grow up, you know? So I did that. I mean, you know, when I came into my first meeting, what my bottom finally was, when I finally stopped using, was I was in my house with the curtains drawn, with my husband at the time was gone, and I had two little babies, and I was loaded and I went to the refrigerator and opened the refrigerator up to get milk for them, and you guys know what was in the refrigerator. There was nothing in the refrigerator. And I remember that, like, you know so much now. Look, this is the reality. There's nothing to feed your children. You know, gah, you know. It's like I called someone because I had the phone numbers. And she says, are you high? And I said, yeah, of course I'm high. And she goes, okay, I'll talk to you this one time. But next time you have to call me before you get high. And for some reason I said, okay. And that worked. You know, it's like I had to make that leap. You know, I had to finally make that decision high. So, I mean, who knows what it takes. I mean, I'm just so grateful that it took that, whatever it was, you know, that had to happen for me. So, you know, the years in between, the first few years in NA were just amazing. There was a small group of kids, really, that we were all about the same age, all under 30. And back in those days, there wasn't a lot of big meetings in my area. And the big meeting that we all went to, I don't remember, I think it was on Tuesday night. It was at a preschool in a church, and the chairs were like, you know, you couldn't sit in them, and nobody would sit in the chair anyway. You know, we were up on the desks and the file cabinets, you know, on the floor, you know. It became really cool to see, you know, where, you know, how you could just stretch out and, you know, sit down. But what would I have done? Because I got rid of my old life and I had nothing, you know, and I got this core group of people that we did everything together. We were it. You know, we were area, we were region, we were, you know, the flyers, we were, you know, the speakers, the secretaries, you know. And, you know, we were all at each other's houses. We were kind of dating each other in between. I was married, but, you know, they were kind of dating each other. And they were home. They were family. They were friends. I mean, I remember one guy came over and helped me change my brakes, my car, you know, that was spray painted, you know. You know, because we didn't have anything. And I was about 18 months, maybe 2 years clean when my husband OD'd. And I remember I was standing at in the doorway, and his sister came knocking at the door, and I opened the door. And I said, "Oh, hi, how are you?" And she just fell to the ground. And she just started crying, and she couldn't speak. And I'm like, "Oh, what's the matter?" And she said, you know, Dennis had died. And, you know, you think about this thing called goodwill or anonymity, you know. I mean, I had almost 18 months to 2 years clean when my husband died. Can you imagine if I hadn't been clean? I called my sponsor. She came over. She gave me $50 because I had no money. And I remember I paid some bill with it. And it was really hard. You know, my two daughters, we were three little girls trying to figure out how to do this thing. And I had gone to school, but I hadn't finished my education. And there was something, you know, it just sort of like game on, you know, recovery. You know, it's like it was already in place, but it was like, I took it with hands, feet, arms, cells, oxygen, and we were having meetings at my house because of the kids, and then other women found out that there was like babysitting upstairs. It wasn't babysitting. It was like I had a little townhouse with the bedrooms upstairs, so we'd have the meeting down here and send all the kids upstairs. You know how that works? And, they're alive. And, you know, we worked the steps. We didn't have workbooks. I mean, when I came in, this book had only come out a couple of years prior. And it was everything. And we worked the steps through the steps that are in here. And, you know, it wasn't It Works How and Why. That hadn't been written yet. We got clean. And, you know, life has been so amazing, you know, finishing my education and getting career, you know. I mean, as a woman, I just, like, that was so important to me, to be self-supporting, for my children. You know, their dad was gone. That was it. I was it. And I was talking to someone about their children, you know, they're everything. You know, I have to be there for them, and I want to be there for them. And so, you know, I remember when I finally finished my graduate degree, I was down in a meeting. I was sort of talking outside, you know, but the meeting had already started, and I was talking to a friend, Anita P., and she goes, "You did it? You finished?" And I went, "Yeah, I finished." She goes, "Come on." And she grabbed my hand, and she drugged me into a meeting, and she announced in the middle of the meeting, "She just got her degree, yay!" And I'm like, "Oh, I'm sorry." And and so much has happened, you know, like with my kids, you know, my mom came into AA and we got a relationship before she died. My dad never did, but we still found a way to be together. And I was there for my mom when she got sick, and I was my dad suddenly dropped dead, but I was there at his memorial, and I spoke at his memorial. You know, I mean, I didn't want to do that. That was you guys doing that, because you said, "Show up and be a daughter." He might not be the dad you want, but guess what? You're a daughter. That's your part. And so you guys gave me that, you know, and it, like, self-esteem is what we get here when we start doing those esteemable acts that we, you know we need to do, or at least you guys tell us we need to do, and we don't want to do, but we talk about it, and then we can do it. Is self-esteem, you know, and we get to see the steps in action in our lives, and it's all about love and service. and seeing how we can be a part of the solution and not always a part of the problem. Being a part of the problem is really easy. You know that one black speck on that white carpet? That's getting all of my attention. And I forget that there's this big white carpet out there. There's a big life. And it's not always centered around me and my little problems of the day. So much has happened, you know, in my... with my children and stuff, you know, I won't go into it. I'll just say that they are amazing. I have a relationship with all three. I ended up having a son in recovery. They are educated, smart, funny, annoying, you know, terrific, terrific kids. I got to be a present and participate financially and emotionally in both of my daughters' weddings. And that was big girl stuff. For sure, being alone, and then my son, you know, he's still young, but he's going for it. He's getting his degree. I think I was about maybe 10 years clean when I like to talk a little bit about it, just because it's like I started to pretend I was normal. You know, and it's like I had the look good going a little bit, you know, kind of have the job, kind of have the house, kind of have the car, the pool in the back, you know, it's good. It's good. We're good. You know, I'd go to meetings. I'd be like, oh, yeah, yeah, whatever, you know, wasn't listening. That what was happening, I didn't know, was that wall starting to come back up. Because I can tell you for sure, please don't try this, but when you don't go to meetings, your heart, you don't know what's happening, and it's happening. And other people around you know it's happening, and you will not know. Because there's something we hear here, like the newcomers or, you know, the old timers that's struggling or whatever. There's something we hear here that's like my sponsor says, it's the medicine for what you don't even know is wrong with you. So I got normal, you know, and it was like I still had contact with my sponsor, and that was the only thing that saved me. And I just started not going to meetings and life, you know. I was working, I had three kids, you know. I'm doing service to my kids, it's okay, you know. And I had dental surgery. And they give you stuff when you have your dental surgery. And I took the stuff, and that's all I wanted. I just wanted the stuff. I didn't want the car, the house, the kids, the job. It was like, I'm an addict. And that stuff almost took me out. And when the only thing that I think that really saved me is I called my sponsor and I said, I'm totally gone. You've got to help me. And so we talked it through. And, you know, and she says, oh, you still, you know, don't worry about it. That was like, I'm freaking out. She's like, don't worry about it. Did you take it as prescribed? I said, yes, but, you know, I'm ready to give it all up. She goes, I'll be on the phone. Go ahead and flush it down the toilet. What? I mean, it was like my lover was leaving me. I mean, that's I got that, like, wow, I am an addict, and I have to go back to meetings, and I have to do this deal all over again, because I'm not normal, you know, I'm just not, and I'm okay with that today, you know. I was about 20 years clean. A sponsee had moved to Hawaii, and I started spending a lot of time with her, you know. She needed me. Darn, I have to go to Hawaii again for my sponsee. And, you know, it's just something rejuvenated in me going there. You know, the NA meetings there are sweet. You know, there's the aloha spirit. And I just started, you know, a whole spiritual side of me that, you know, was there or whatever, just really started opening up. I started going to different, you know, kind of trying different things. And I found a spiritual practice that was, it was just, I fit. Just like I fit here, I fit there. And I had just kind of gone through a round of steps again, and I was working on my 11th step. And so I just started, when I got back, I just started going around to different places. And I found this place up near where I live now. And it's not an NA, but it's my spiritual practice. It's part of my 11th step. And it opened up a beautiful world for me. So, I mean, you know, I think like that. I think, you know, this is it. You know, this is nice. You know, I have a great life. You know, I got my kids or whatever, but that's it, right? No, not necessarily. I met a woman in the program. She was 65. She was 55 when her husband died, 65 when she got married, and 85 when she was widowed again after 20 years of marriage. So, I mean, anything can happen. So I met my partner up there at the place where I have my spiritual practice, and I ended up moving up there to sort of enrich my life in that way too. So we went to meetings, and we went to on retreat up there at the place where we live near. And I think it was about 4 years ago now where he suddenly got sick, and then he died. And that was, no doubt the darkest part of my life, because with him being in recovery and being a part of that spiritual community, there was this heart that I had been healing all along in NA. It was completely open to another human being. There was mutual respect, compatibility, companionship, partnership. There was the language of the heart. There was personal ownership of issues, you know, both sides, you know. It was amazing. I got to experience that kind of level of two people in recovery, you know, valuing these principles, these steps, these traditions, and working them in and being together in a loving relationship. And I'm grateful, you know. I talk about being a big girl, you know. I mean, I stood up for him, stood with him when he was sick. With hospice there, it was only 3 weeks when he was diagnosed, and then he died. He was actually on his way to a men's breakfast when he first had a stroke, and then it was cancer, and then he was gone. And, you know, how did I make it through that? You know, it was a loving higher power, full of grace. You know, we had two memorial services for him, one down where he's from in Salinas, and one up there at the retreat center. And, you know, people came, and it was, you know, it was, I did it. I did it, you guys. Thank you, you know, all the way through. And now I'm doing it still. Because there was such a part of me that wanted, you know, that closed up. That wall went up. And I actually couldn't even work for about 3 months. And the only thing I could do was get up, take me a while, but then get to that noon meeting in San Rafael. And every day go to that meeting. And whatever it brought, you know. It was all I could do for 3 months. But, you know, his bills are paid. He had a beautiful memorial service. It was all done. If there's sort of a right way to do it, I don't know if there is or not, but that was a beautiful, grace-filled way to help someone transition into their next incarnation or whatever. And then now to hold that space, you know, of that he mirrored to me, you know, that person. You know, that he mirrored to me that I am, to continue to show up for that person, you know, to value that person that he saw in me as much as he valued it, and to enrich my world for myself, my children, my sponsees, my kitty cats, you know, my group of women in meetings, you know, where I work, the people I work for. And so that's been hard, you know, getting to know and value myself. And, you know, we talk about NA giving you wings to fly. And sort of this internal, eternal self-discovery of, you know, what that higher power is, where you connect with that, what's really you, you know, now in this moment. And I just started, like, randomly started, I was trained in classical music, but I just started, like, listening to classical music and just being enriched by classical music. Like, it's a beautiful thing that's happened into my life. I think I was about, it was about 2 years after he died, and it was sort of like, okay, I could be miserable here this summer, or I could be miserable in Paris. Let's see. I think I'll go be miserable in Paris. So a friend from the program knew someone that had an apartment, and so I rented an apartment in Paris for the summer, and just went by myself. You know, I didn't want to go with anyone, because it's like when you're discovering who you are, you need time to do that. And there's a big part of me that says, oh, you want to go there? Okay, I'll go there. And never check in with, do I want to go there? What do I want to do? What do I need right now? And, you know, I met a lot of wonderful people, and I ended up going back the next year. I had been to Paris before, and I'd always wanted to go back, like, you know, like, just to experience it. And I didn't want an agenda, you know. I just wanted the whole day free every day to see what would happen. And, you know, I was miserable. but I was miserable in Paris, so. Yeah, all the feelings came with me, you know, every single one, you know. You know, how do you get 30 years? No matter what. No matter what. And I have a friend, my friend Tom in Hawaii, he always says, how do you stay clean? You stay clean when it makes no sense to stay clean. And when my husband died, you know, there's people like, oh, you need a little something. You know, you're just so depressed. You should probably, you know, some anti-anxiety medications, some antidepressants, you know, maybe a little something. You need some, you know. I'm like, I do not need anything like that, because if I took something, I would lose what I know. I would lose myself. I would be gone to myself. I would be cut off from my higher power. I would be ashamed to be with you guys and say I'm new again, and what didn't work that should have worked that I tried that has to work again, and I don't know how that's going to work. And, you know, I don't know why I stayed clean and what it took for me to stay clean, like that perfect little recipe, but I never want to find out. If I can get back here, you know, it is my bottom and my clean date are my most valuable possessions. And without that, I do not have anything. Is there one thing more to me? I think the only, maybe I'll just talk just a little bit. I know I got to get off the stage here, about the importance of sponsorship. I'm not a person that has this lineage, and I'm all proud of my lineage. Like Tom was saying, you know, when I came in, there wasn't that. You know, there was the person sitting next to you that had one more day, and she was the only woman in, you know, she was younger than you, but, you know, she was 18 and you were 24, but, you know, she was your sponsor. You know, that's how it worked. And so I don't go into that, you know, that thing of personal distinction, you know, that's, we have to safeguard against that. So I sponsor women, and that's where, you know, that's one addict talking to another is the magic of the program. That's where it happens. It doesn't happen in a convention necessarily. It doesn't happen with a guru speaker necessarily. It's me in your kitchen talking to you. And I value my sponsors so much, my sponsor and the girls that I sponsor so much. And, you know, if this is my brand of recovery, this is not NA talking, you know. I mean, when I got clean, we used to say, I'm a drug addict. you know, because we said if you're an addict, well, oh, you're addicted to donuts, you know, shut up, you know, you are a fucking drug addict, you know. And so people say they're an addict, and I'm like, oh, they're an addict, you know. So, you know, I mean, it's just how I got clean. It's just what I do to stay clean. And it certainly has been my privilege to talk with all of you. Thank you so much.